Hello and welcome to Physics Frontiers. This is episode number 57, Quantum Effects in Gravitational Waves. Show notes for this episode can be found at frontiers.physicsfm.com/57. Show notes include the papers we read for this podcast, related episodes, and other things we may have mentioned during the podcast. And now, Jim and Randy.
Hey, Randy, how's it going?
Jim, it's good to hear from you. We've got a fun topic tonight that I'm really delighted to talk about. This is a thought which has been kind of rattling around in the back of my mind for a long time, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners feel the same way. But there's actually two things going on here. We're going to be talking about the gravitational waves and sort of the cosmic gravitational wave background radiation, and we're also going to be talking about quantum gravity. And both of these papers that we're looking at, the first one is Quantum Effects in Gravity Waves by Tiago Guerrero. That's a 2020 paper. And the other one you found, which was really good, was The Noise of Gravitons, which has Frank Wilczek and two other authors, Parikh and Zaharid, I think. We're going to talk about experimental sort of directions coming out of the theoretical work to see if we could detect quantum effects in gravity waves.
Yeah, I mean, these are interesting. There are basically two papers looking at ways to show, basically, gravitons exist, right? So there were some doubt about that. There's a paper by Dyson that they both reference called Is a Graviton Detectable? That came out in, like, 2012. And that goes through a lot of work to show, basically, that more or less they aren't. That's not really the point of the paper. It doesn't say they aren't detectable. It says that, you know, we have three different ways to talk about things being undetectable. And he says more or less that they're not, in principle, not detectable. It just seems like with the sorts of measurements that we know about, probably we won't be able to detect them.
That's right. And as our listeners might remember from our last episode on gravitational wave astronomy, which you know, is well underway now that we have LIGO actually detecting gravity waves, that Albert Einstein, in his time, thought that gravitational waves would never be detected because they were so weak. But of course, he couldn't have anticipated like interferometers, you know, laser interferometers of, you know, huge scale and the advancing technologies. So it does seem like it's out of reach experimentally now, but it's really good to see proposals like this coming around, which show how, you know, if we could achieve sufficient sensitivity and the right conditions, that we might be able to see a quantum effect. And that would give us some parameters to start figuring out, I guess, quantum gravity.
Yeah, and that is if gravity is quantized. So one of the interesting throwaway lines in, I think, the Guerrero paper.
Guerrero, maybe?
I think it's Guerrero.
Sorry for butchering your name. It was a great paper. Nothing personal.
Yeah, I think it's a Portuguese name. One of the great throwaway things is in there is that, unlike electromagnetism, the quantization of matter doesn't require gravity to be quantized. So apparently for electromagnetism, this is a very old result, if matter is quantized, if we have little tiny smallest bits of matter, which apparently we do, electromagnetism has to be quantized in some way. But that's not true for gravity.
So mathematically, it's not a requisite.
That's right. Well, I mean, that's not true. I mean, basically, you just look at general relativity and sort of try to quantize it, and you just say, well, this doesn't have to be, I guess. I mean, that's interesting, but that actually makes the measurements more important, right? Because if it was necessarily true that gravity was quantized, then, you know, detecting the gravitons would be, it might be something like what they do at the LHC, where, you know, you're looking for your Higgs. Now, everybody thinks, well, for the standard model to work, there must be this massless spin zero boson. So if we don't detect it, that's a horrible thing, right? Because that means the entire theory collapses, right? For the graviton, if you don't detect it, well, you don't detect it, right? If it was the other way around, then detecting them isn't so much of a big deal because you can still work on your gravity theories or your quantum gravity theories, and you'd still know you were doing something in the right direction. Whereas right now, all these super string guys and these loop quantum gravity guys and all the other quantum gravity guys are doing something that, you know, they really believe is true, but it's not something that they know has to be, right? At least based on the things that we know right now.
Is there any way to unify all the forces of nature without a quantum theory of gravity?
I don't think so. I think the whole idea is that if, you know, if all the other forces are quantized, then you need some sort of quantized theory of gravity to unify the forces. That means that they're all aspects of the same force, just as the universe cools down. The symmetry breaking stuff is basically when the symmetry breaks, you break off a strong force, and it breaks over here, you break off the weak force, and that's why you have the different forces. Now, if gravity is really purely geometrical, right, and has nothing to do with this sort of string field, then it's just two different forces. You know, they're not unified. Yes, they have to interact. Yes, you have to figure out how to make them interact, and I think they do a pretty good job of that already. But no, you can't make them into just one thing, and so you don't have your toes.
Unless, like Verlinde and others have talked about, right, where they think that gravity could be an emergent phenomenon, right?
If gravity is an emergent phenomenon, that's a different thing. But then possibly there's a way to think about it as a unification. But it's not really unification. It's really just, you know, a statistical phenomenon rather than a fundamental force.
Right. But maybe in that case, you wouldn't need to quantize gravity.
Yeah, maybe you wouldn't need to quantize it. Then it would be based on all these other forces in some way.
Right.
But it wouldn't be an aspect of the one true force. So I don't think you end up with your toe.
Theory of everything. Yeah.
But you could still get a gut.
You could still get a gut. There was another line in here that caught my eye in the first paper, the quantum effects in gravity waves paper, where he's at the end, he's like, physics isn't experimental science. So we should do this. You know, so he's advocating for doing these kinds of experiments. Because even with gravity, I mean, we're just so accustomed to looking at gravity as something that you really can't experiment with in the same way that you can with quantum mechanics, that I think a lot of people think of this kind of work as a purely theoretical enterprise. But, you know, this is, I guess, one of the prime motives between both of these papers is that, you know, hey, we really should start looking and to see if we can find a way to test gravity for quantum properties. And they've made good progress, I think, in that direction. The first paper, he talks about measuring the effects of gravitational waves interacting with an electromagnetic field in a resonant cavity. And in the second paper, they're talking about how gravitational noise will appear in the changes in length of the laser arms in a laser interferometer, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they're both going to be interferometers. One's a Fabry-Perot interferometer, and the other one is more like a LIGO. It's probably just a Michelson interferometer, just a giant, super-sensitive Michelson interferometer sort of deal. You get this idea for both of them that somehow the strain, right, the strain in space-time is going to oscillate. That's what makes your gravitational wave, and that's somehow going to be detectable in your device, right? Basically, for the Guerrero paper, slightly changing the size of your cavity. And if you slightly change the size of your cavity, you change its resonance frequency. And so you're looking at that. And for the Parikh paper, you're changing the length of your arm in the Michelson interferometer, basically just as in the LIGO experiment.
In the first paper, he's talking about the quadrature changing. Is that actually like a physical rotation and squeezing of the photon? Or is that just sort of a pictorial description of something that we can't observe directly in a complex phase space of polarization?
Okay, well, he's talking about sort of a variance. He's talking about a change in the uncertainty in your wave packet, basically. So he's looking for a phase, right? He's looking for some sort of phase change, and he's looking specifically to have this state squeeze into a state that's smaller than it should be able to get into based on the uncertainty principle.
Is that where he came up with the estimate that with the kind of parameters that are potentially achievable that you'd see a shift of like a one part in a billion? Is that what he was estimating?
I don't remember exactly.
At some point he quantified it, and I was like, well, one in a billion, that doesn't sound too bad. We detect stuff down with that level of precision all the time, you know?
OK, Okay, yeah, so here it is. Yeah, so that's the phase change, and that's sort of a back of the envelope calculation. That particular calculation is one that is the same in general relativity, right? So this is what they're actually using with LIGO right now. So he basically did, he says three things, but he really did two things. One was he did that phase shift that he's talking about, and that's something you can actually detect. That's how you detect things in the interferometer. And the next one is the squeeze state. Right. So he talked about the squeeze state a couple of times. The squeeze state is the thing that you don't get from general relativity, but you do get from the quantum effects. So he was looking at a previous paper by Ma, who did a slightly different experiment. Actually, it looks like he's talking almost about that experiment, and then he switches things. But Ma was just talking about how to tell if the entire system is really quantum mechanical or if there's some classical influence. He did this Fabry-Perot interferometer thing. You know, with a Fabry-Perot interferometer, you have two mirrors, and one of those mirrors is sort of half-silvered, if I remember, and you end up getting an interference pattern, a diffraction pattern, from your bouncing light ray, if I remember from my junior lab, however many decades ago. And so this guy was saying, well, if I let my top mirror, let's say, sort of oscillate, I put it free in sort of a quantum potential so that it's sort of moving around randomly because of the quantum mechanics. Then I can see this squeezing, and that would happen classically as well for the first sort of squeeze. But classically, all of those oscillation modes for the cap would then have different phases. They'd have completely random phases, and they wouldn't be correlated in any way, and they'd all sort of even out eventually. But with the quantum, if that's really a quantum potential that this thing's jumping around in, what happens is those phases have, you know, certain modes that they're allowed to be in, right? They have a certain quantum state. So they might not be in a pure state, but they still only have a certain number of these states they're allowed to be in. And so because you have a finite number of these states, and I think they're probably all related by, you know, a quantum number, you have this recurrence, he calls it. It's like a spin echo. That's what spin echoes are, right? It's sort of like a spin echo in this interferometer. And he had three things. If your electromagnetic field in the cavity and your mirror were both classical, you'd see that initial squeezing and then nothing after that. If electromagnetic field were quantized, which it should be, and the other guy was not, then everything would average out and you wouldn't even see the first squeezing. But if they were both quantum mechanical, you'd see the squeezing, and then you'd see the squeezing happens spontaneously later, right? So just like you would with an NMR experiment, and, you know, that's so real that they use it to look for oil. So that's what he's done, is he's taken that other experiment and he said, well, instead of that floating mirror, what I'll do is I'll have the actual cavity change its size because, you know, you have a passing gravitational wave. And so that'll squeeze the cavity, and that'll end up rotating our waves, right? That squeezes the cavity, and so if we get this squeezing coming back, this recurrence, this echo, then...
You see, basically the graviton signature, huh?
That's a signature for the gravitons that gravity is quantized.
Now, they also discussed, I think, squeezed gravitational waves, didn't they, in the second paper that we looked at?
Did they actually talk about squeezed gravitational waves?
I think that's what they were talking about. Let me see if I can... Because that confused me, because I think they were talking about... Yeah, they were talking about for coherent states of gravitational waves, the noise is very small, and then this is in the abstract, but it can be greatly enhanced in thermal and especially squeezed states. And apparently they're talking about squeezed gravitational waves from the inflationary epoch. Apparently there may be squeezed gravitational waves from the birth of the universe. I've never read across that idea before, and I was kind of wondering how that worked. But
I'm not sure how that would work, but I guess with inflation you get the same sort of effect as if you have that mirror. Maybe something like that's going to happen. Yeah, in that second paper, you know, they're just looking at sort of a lever arm. In a way, that makes it easier, but they end up with this... I'm not sure if you'd call it a modified Hill equation. They end up with dynamical equation for the lever arm that has sort of three terms. One is your normal general relativistic term. One is a radiation term. And one is a quantum mechanical term that basically comes from the noise of the gravitational field.
Does that also apply to the gravitational wave noise from the birth of the universe? Because we'd expect that there's a lot of, actually, I guess there'd be a lot of gravitational wave noise all throughout the universe, right? But extremely low amplitude. So in theory, you know, the LIGO experiments are, you know, are looking just for what we could observe from really high intensity gravitational waves. But the whole universe should be just flowing with like a thermal bath of gravity waves, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that it should. Well, you know, Dyson went through that and he tried to show that the thermal gravity waves would not be enough for something you could detect with known detectors and a couple of classes of detectors that he was thinking up in his head. But I guess with these mixed states, that's the only way I can think about it. If you have a mixed state, there's some mixed states that you could have an enhanced effect that you could see. It all depends on what they are. I mean, the only examples they give are basically inflation and an evaporating black hole.
And I don't know if the universe is even old enough, unless there was primordial black holes, for us to observe an evaporating black hole, right? As I recall, it was like any of the kind of black holes that we would expect to see form under current prevailing conditions, like from stars that are larger than the sun. Apparently they take like, you know, 10 to the 15th or more orders of magnitude of years in order to evaporate. Like it's far beyond our current age of the universe, as I recall.
Got plenty of time to set up your detector. Well, you know, there are probably other things that you might be able to see, right? Especially with all the things out there that we don't know what they are.
Well, it might have been the Wilczek paper where they were talking about, and I shouldn't call it the Wilczek paper because he's probably only a contributing author, but I just love his work so much, it sticks into my mind. So they were talking about the chirp from a binary star, I guess when it collapses. But if you take just one wavelength of that gravitational wave chirp, you could do the analysis of it that way, right?
I think it was in the other one, because I remember when I reread this, I had that marked off, and then I thought, well, even though that's really interesting, that's actually not what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. It was in the first paper, I got them mixed up.
When that guy was talking about the coherent states.
Yeah, he was talking about a monochromatic gravitational wave.
So he's saying that we know that there are systems with chirp, so they're not monochromatic systems. And that's what we actually detect. But he's just going to look at coherent states in this paper.
Well, I guess that makes sense because, you know, I guess squeezed gravitational wave states are still kind of very theoretical. But in both papers, they're saying that you could detect the quantization of gravity waves much easier if you had those waves, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what would actually go into building one of these, right? So we have this idea for the Wilczek paper, for the Parikh paper. That looks a lot like LIGO, right? This other one doesn't look so much like LIGO, right? So I guess somebody probably already is putting together a really expensive proposal to build one of these things. I expect somebody would do that. And then maybe you can see what's actually going on that way. So, I mean, it would be interesting, but I don't know exactly how it would work.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of some of the experiments in the Quantum Paradoxes book that we were looking at back when we were doing Physics FM. As Avronov and Rorlik were often talked about experiments where you could potentially detect some of these really exotic quantum effects, but they were just beyond any kind of reasonable experimental achievability, you know. But that's where it starts, right? You got to start looking at this stuff and trying to figure out, okay, can we get from here to there?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of progress has been made just by asking yourself, well, what's happening here? What's happening inside here? Can you actually get something inside, like the Aharonov Bohm effect, right? Yeah, that's pretty reasonable there. So I think we've hit the main overview of these guys, right? I think it's interesting that Parikh gets this sort of Abraham Lorentz acceleration. And I think it's interesting that he got it with a dt to the fifth term. So it's got a fifth derivative instead of a third derivative, like that Abraham Lorentz equation. And I didn't remember anything about Abraham Lorentz, so I pulled out my old copy of Jackson, which is sort of the standard text for graduate electricity and magnetism. And it was in the very last chapter, not the last chapter. It was the last section of the last chapter, which is why I probably didn't remember it.
You're already going to frat parties at that point?
No, they don't invite old men to frat parties. You have to remember, the point of a frat party is not to get more guys in your frat house.
That's right.
So, you know, inviting random physicists to your frat party is, or inviting random male physicists to your frat party isn't something that helps you out. So, you know, you're just trying to raise that female to male ratio at the party. And I don't help anybody with that. So
you were talking about how you used a quantum gravitational wave calculation to arrive at a classical general relativity effect, right?
For this? The thing with the Parikh paper is that it had two references that were from the same authors. Both are to appear. So maybe they have appeared, but this came out on the archive in May 14th, so they still might not be appearing. I didn't look at them. I probably should have looked at them. But I have to, you know, spend a lot of extra time at work doing my real job.
There were a lot of intriguing references in these papers. I wish I could have followed up on all of them.
The actual calculations and stuff on how he did this show up in a paper called Quantum Mechanics of Gravitational Waves, which is sort of to appear. This was the first place prize for the 2020 essay competition of the Gravity Research Foundation. I think we talked about one of their essay prizes before.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, with the guy from Canada. Maybe another competition, but I don't know how many essay competitions there are.
Was that Paranjapay? Manu Paranjapay and his grad students were talking about bubbles of perfect fluid and how that could create like a negative gravitational effect.
Possibly, because I don't remember what they were. I just thought about that right now. Thought a little bit about it when I saw the notice that it was first prize in this essay competition. So there's more to learn about this. There's a lot more to learn about this, and it might not even be available. But you're right about some of the references. So there are two references that probably everybody should go out and read right now. One is the Feynman paper.
Oh, yeah.
So that was interesting. That is Quantum Theory of Gravitation from 1963. And that's actually a conference paper of some kind because it has discussion afterwards. So it has, you know, DeWitt and other people asking him questions and his responses.
So that was the paper where Feynman showed that consistency in the quantum mechanics of a massless spin two particle leads to general relativity?
That's right.
Cool.
The other one that I think people should all pick up is that Dyson paper we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, they both mentioned.
That's the one they both mentioned, is the graviton detectable. But there were some other great titles here that I didn't pick up. One is Quantum Weirdness from 2019. There's an important one on the quantum theory of weak gravitational fields that says that matter quantization does not imply quantum gravity. So that's something to look up. It doesn't sound so amazing. The Guerriero paper referenced a Krauss and Wilczek paper using cosmology to establish the quantization of gravity.
Nice.
That I didn't notice until recently. There's one by Bassi, Grossart, and Ulbricht, Gravitational Decoherence from 2017. And there's also a 1996 paper by Allen called The Stochastic Gravitational Wave Background. So all those look really good. I can tell you think so because you're typing.
Yeah, I'm taking notes.
So, yeah, I mean, these do reference a lot of really good papers out of this. But I think they both show that there are possible ways to pull out from gravitational waves a trace for gravitons, is I think the way Parikh put it. Are there any other things that you can think of?
Yeah, they were talking about coherent states in the first paper. And he was saying that decoherence and dispersion are like negligible up to distances that are like the size of the universe.
Yeah, that makes life a little... Well, decoherence and dispersion are negligible. That actually makes life easier, right? Well, but I guess that's... You can detect something about the Big Bang with your gravitational waves, right? Okay. Was there anything else that you thought was super important to note about these guys?
Let me see. I really liked the little revivals of the squeeze state were really interesting. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all the major points. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the researchers at LIGO do with refining the clarity of their wave detections, because I know that, you know, we'll be able to learn a lot of really interesting things about invisible scenarios, like inside of a black hole and everything, once they can parse all the fine details out of the gravitational wave signals. But I guess the resolution is still too low for that. But it's exciting to know that gravitational wave astronomy is going to be a recurring topic, because it's starting to move forward now, you know. Oh, there was one thing that I wanted to talk about here briefly. Apparently, they have detected phase oscillations in light as observed by LIGO. So let me see here. That's a quote from, I think, the second paper. But, yeah, I didn't realize that LIGO had already started like correlating passing gravitational waves with phase oscillations in light. So they're already seeing some of these interactions between gravitational waves and light.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay, well, excellent.
Thank you so much for your time, and have a great time. And, you know, beguiling.
Okay, I will do that. You know, you faded out there, so if I can actually get the thing, I'll do whatever it is you said.
I was just telling you to have a good time beguiling your students over the internet now that we're all in the pandemic lockdown phase of reality.
Oh, that's not a good time,
no.
Randy. It's not a good time. Okay. Thanks for talking, Randy.
You too, Jim. Bye.
Okay, bye now. You have just heard Physics Frontiers episode number 57, Quantum Effects in Gravitational Waves. Show notes for this episode can be found at frontiers.physicsfm.com/57. Show notes include the papers we read for this podcast, links to previous podcasts, and a few other extras. Bye now.